10th canto, the Samambona. Chapter 60, Krishna teases Rukmini. Text 46.
Ashtvam bujakshama mate charananuraka.
Ashtvam bujakshama mate charananuraka.
Atman ratasya mai channakar. Rikta drishti.
Atman ratasya mai channakar.
Ya hyasya. Vridoya upata raja te matro. Mam ikshasi tatuha na paramukampa.
Mam ikshasi tatuha na paramukampa.
Asvam Jaksha mamate charananuraka. Atman ratasya mai channaka rikta drishti.
Atman ratasya mai channaka rikta drishti.
Ya hyasya vridoya upata rajote matro.
Ya hyasya vridoya upata
Ikshasi taduha na paranukampa.
Ikshasi taduha na paranukampa.
Asvam bujaksha mamate charananuraka.
Asvam bujaksha mamate charananuraka.
Atman ratasya mai channati rikta drishti.
Atman ratasya mai channati rikta drishti.
Yahyasya vidoya upati upatara jyoti matro.
Yahyasya vidoya upatara jyoti matro.
Mam ikshasi taduha na paranukampa.
Mam ikshasi taduha na paranukampa.
Astu.
Astu.
May there be.
Ambuja Aksha.
O Lotus Eyed One. Mama.
Mai.
Te.
Your.
Charana.
For
the feet.
Anuraga.
Steady attraction.
Atman.
In yourself. Ratasya. Who take pleasure. Mai. Toward me. Cha
and
Anatirikta,
not much.
Drishti,
whose glance?
Yahi,
when?
Asya,
of this universe.
Vridoye,
for the increase.
Upata,
assuming.
Raja,
of the mode of passion.
Ati matra,
an
abundance.
Mam,
at me.
Ikshase,
you look.
Tat,
that.
Uha,
indeed.
Na,
for us.
Parama,
the greatest.
Anukampa,
show of mercy.
Translation and purport by the followers of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
O Lotus Eyed One, though you are satisfied within yourself and thus really turn your attention toward me, please bless me with steady love for your feet. It is when you assume a predominance of passion in order to manifest the universe that you glance upon me, showing me what is indeed your greatest mercy. Please repeat. O Lotus Eyed One,
O Lotus Eyed One,
though you are satisfied within yourself,
though you are satisfied within yourself,
and thus really turn your attention towards me,
and thus really turn your attention towards me,
Please bless me with steady love.
Please bless me with steady love.
For your lotus feet.
For your lotus feet.
It is when you assume.
It is when you assume.
A predominance of passion.
A predominance of passion.
In order to manifest the universe.
In order to manifest the universe.
That you glance upon me.
That you glance upon me.
Showing me what. Showing me what.
Showing me what.
Is indeed your greatest mercy.
Is indeed your greatest mercy.
Purport. In text 20 of this chapter, Lord Krishna stated, always satisfied within ourselves, we care nothing for wives, children, and wealth. Here Rukmini Devi humbly replies, yes, you take pleasure within yourself, and therefore really look at me. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that Lord Krishna had already declared his love for Rukmini. Bhagavatam 10:53-2. Tataham api tachito nandram cha nabe labe nasi. I am also thinking about her so much that I cannot sleep at night. Lord Krishna is satisfied within himself, and if we remember that Srimati Rukmini Devi is his internal potency, we can understand that his loving affairs with her are expressions of his pure spiritual happiness. Here, however, Queen Rukmini humbly identifies herself with the Lord's external energy, which is her expansion. Therefore she says, though you do not often look at me, when you are ready to manifest the material universe and thus begin to work through the material quality of passion, which is your potency, you glance at me. In this way you show me your greatest mercy. Thus Acharya Vishwanath explains that Goddess Rukmini Acharya Vishwanath explains that Goddess Rukmini's statement can be understood in two ways. And of course, Vaishnavas, after thoroughly understanding the philosophy of Krishna from the bona fide Acharyas, simply relish these loving affairs between Lord Krishna and his exalted devotees. Om Jnana Tumanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Dena Tasmay Sri Guru Namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, but my merciful spiritual master came to me and opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So, I've been continuing with this pastime for some time now. Remember, it's at least probably 3 weeks now. And of course it's a very wonderful pastime, very, very deep. Very intimate, actually. Of course, the situation is that Krishna is in Rukmini's palace. It's the evening time. The moonlight is shining through in the garden and through the lattice work of the windows. The incense is bellowing in great profusion through the holes of the window screen and mixing with the scent from the garden, the different flowers, the parijata especially. And in this, how do we say, romantic or enchanting setting, Krishna is seated on the bedstead of Rukmini Devi, his principal wife, first wife. And there were also maidservants there. And initially, the maidservants were fanning Krishna, serving the husband of their mistress. And then Rukmini, out of the ecstasy of love, takes the chamara fan from the hand of one of the maidservants and begins to fan Krishna herself. Simply as an opportunity to express her love. And then Krishna, you know, he's sitting there and he's beginning to think, you know, Rukmini is so chaste. Even when I gave a Even when Satyabhama became so jealous of the Parijata flower that I gave to Rukmini and demanded a whole tree, and I went to the heavenly planets, had a battle with Lord Indra, uprooted a tree, brought it down, planted it in the courtyard of Satyabhama. Even then, she did not manifest any jealous love. She did not get angry. In fact, she didn't even say anything. So chaste. She didn't want to inconvenience Krishna with any uncontrolled emotion. She thought, it's my duty as a chaste wife or devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to always act in a way that is completely pleasing to the Lord. But of course, Krishna, you know, he enjoys many different rasas with many different devotees. So Satyabhama, she is very jealous. She became furious upon learning that Krishna had presented Rukmini Devi with a Parijata flower and not her. And she began to rebuke Krishna and frown. And Krishna enjoyed that. Because there's many different flavors in devotional service, many different aspects of the relationship, many different emotional exchanges which create a rich tapestry in the spiritual world. So Krishna was curious, perhaps I can agitate Rukmini Devi, who is an ocean of chastity, ocean of love. Her mood is always controlled, composed, and completely calculated for my pleasure. But I wonder if I can agitate her and with love, anger arising from love. So then he proceeds to tease her. That's the name of the chapter. Krishna teases Rukmini. And he begins to say many things. First, stating that he is actually completely unworthy for somebody of her class and her good qualities. In fact, he's a rascal, he says. I'm a rascal, I'm also a coward, I ran away from the princes and the kings, and I've taken shelter in the ocean. Nobody knows my varna. Am I a cowherd boy? Am I a kshatriya? Because ordinarily there's not intermarriage between the different varnas, because the match should be equal. So he's saying, my varna is unknown. I'm an enigma. I'm a mystery. Nobody can figure me out. And generally, it's dangerous to hang out with such enigmas. If a woman becomes seduced or falls in love with somebody with no fixed sort of standing in society, with no fixed purpose in life, a wanderer, then generally her situation is not very stable or safe. And she often cops a lot of ridicule from the more proper sectors of society. So in this way he's saying, it wasn't a very intelligent choice. Simply by hearing about me, you wanted to marry me. Is that sufficient information to make a real decision? And, your brother, elder brother, he wanted to marry you to Shishupal. And in fact, so many kings and princes were just completely in rapture, completely enchanted by your beauty. And they just wanted, they would have fallen over, head over heels to be able to take you as a wife. Yet you chose me. And who am I? I'm a coward. I'm an enigma. No fixed purpose, no fixed varna. So in this way, he began to create tried to create some unsteadiness, some confusion in the mind of Rukmini Devi, some doubt. And then he changed tack. He said, actually, I don't even particularly care for you. It's simply because I wanted to give spite and poke fun at and tease the other kings who are my rivals that I kidnapped you, because I knew they were so enchanted by you. And if I were to take you away from them at your Svayambhara in a very sudden way, they would be completely ticked off. They would be completely angry. They would feel completely cheated. So it's actually this reason why I married you. Like, actually, I don't have much affection for you. And then he said, actually, you know, I'm simply interested in self-realization. I don't actually give a fig for home, wife, children, you know, all the trappings of a respectable life in the material world. I'm actually not attracted to these things at all. I'm completely detached, aloof, and simply interested in self-realization. So in this way, he was trying to pull the rug out from under Rukmini Devi. And he was expecting that she would not appreciate this and just say, look, my dear husband, don't speak such nonsense. This is completely inappropriate. We've got grown-up children, for God's sake. We've got grown-up children. It's not an option for me to take another husband. And, you know, she wanted to, you know, normally women and men also, they want to feel that the person they're involved with is completely into it. So Krishna was expecting her to basically chastise him in the anger of love. But she didn't do that. Rukmini Devi is completely aware of Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And she was completely aware that her relationship with him was completely his mercy. That no quality she possessed was sufficient to gain the attention or the position she had. It was simply his mercy. And she was also aware that Krishna could leave her at any moment. Earlier in the Bhagavatam it says that because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is all attractive, the Goddess of Fortune, who is normally flickering by nature, stays on the chest of Lord Narayan. Krishna says himself, even though I have no attraction and no attachment for the Goddess of Fortune, still she stays at my lotus feet. And she's attached to her position on my chest. So she was aware of the situation. And if she was a little bit proud, which is suggested, she was a little bit proud because Krishna spent a lot of time with her. And this happens in the lives of devotees sometimes, you know. If you're going very nicely, you're performing very nice service, or people are glorifying you, other devotees are glorifying you, it's sometimes a little bit of pride comes up. But it's our duty, actually, to cut down that pride. Why is that? Because that pride inflates the false ego. And when the false ego is inflated, it's hard to think of yourself as a devotee. In fact, you start to think, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. And again, Maya floods the consciousness. So, Bhagavatam suggests, the Acharya suggests, that perhaps Rukmini was a little bit puffed up. So Krishna just wanted to reveal that at any moment I could leave you. And she immediately became aware of this. And that caused her the most intense fear. For the devotee, the greatest fear is not an economic depression. It's not It's not war. It's not so many things. That's not even death. The greatest fear for the devotee is to lose their Krishna consciousness. And it is by Krishna consciousness that they're in contact with the Lord. And that is their shelter, actually. Because being in contact with the Lord, being Krishna conscious, having Krishna within the consciousness is not different from the association of Krishna, actually. Having the holy name of the tongue on the tongue is no different from the association of Krishna. So the devotee's fear that is that they will forget or they will lose that association, especially of other devotees. Because it is in the association of devotees that that Krishna is tasted, Krishna is present. Krishna likes that. That's where he manifests, in the association of devotees. So the devotee's greatest fear is that they will lose their connection with Krishna and again become absorbed in the material energy as if it was separate from Krishna, because that's what we're thinking. You see, the situation of the conditioned soul is that due to a desire to enjoy separately from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we have entered a dream world. And in that dream world, we become shackled with a false ego, ahankara, which is the junction between our consciousness and this material energy. It's the junction, it's the binding force, which causes us to identify with a small lump of material energy. What is that lump of material energy? It's the material body. Also, the mind. Five material elements: earth, air, fire, water, space. They make up the physical body, which then has 10 senses. 5 gyan indriya and 5 karma indriya. The gyan indriya are sight, the eyes, ears, smell, taste, touch. And they form our field of perception. And then we have karma indriya. What is karma?
Working.
Yeah, working or action. So that's with our karma indriya, we get busy in the material energy. So they are 2 hands, 2 legs, tongue for speaking, genitals for procreation, reproduction, for expanding your dynasty. And with that, your influence. And your anus for defecating. So, with this body, with 9 gates, you know, different senses, made of 5 material elements, and then also with the mind, which is the reservoir of all the senses all pool into the mind. Just like many rivers pool into a reservoir or lake. So all the inputs from the senses, they pool into a mind. And the mind is simply developing desires according to those, according to the inputs of the senses. And the intelligence is then discriminating and making plans how to attain different sense objects, how to bring desires into fruition. And all this is presided over by the false ego, which gives us a false sense of self. We think, I am this body. I am these 10 senses. I am this lump of material energy, subtle and gross. And you identify with the form, the color of the body. You develop certain attraction to the certain sense objects related to that body. And in this way, you become absorbed in the material world, hankering and lamenting in terms of a transient illusion. The material energy manifests so many things before us, and we develop desires and we begin to act. We try and claim the energy of this world as our own, false proprietorship, carve out our plot, identifying with to different degrees with different different portions of the material world we try and claim for ourselves. And of course our desire is, just as the desire of every living conditioned living entity is to expand that domination and to enjoy. So we can try and control and enjoy this material world, which of course is nothing but the energy of Krishna. It's nothing but the energy of Krishna. But because of our false ego, because of our desire to enjoy separately, we need to forget. Krishna grants that request. From me comes remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. So graciously, the super soul covers your remembrance, gives you a certain tunnel vision, puts the blinkers on. You know, the draft horses, powerful creatures. They can pull heavy, heavy loads. We even have them in Melbourne. You know, you've got those, you got that horse and cart that goes up and down Swanston Street. And, you know, you've got couples moonlighting in the going down past the gardens. And so this is a horse, and you notice that they have blinkers on. Tunnel vision is because if the horse becomes distracted by something in its peripheral vision, it might suddenly rear off. So they have to keep it focused. So in this way we become covered. Our original knowledge becomes covered. And we become fully absorbed in our body and the desires of the body. With the hope that by pursuing our desires and by trying to increase our domination of the material world, we will become happy and satisfied. But of course, this is a big illusion. Nobody in the history of the material world has been perfectly satisfied. Even those who rise to the very top of the heap, the rock stars, Mick Jagger, you know, he became famous. Things we're all looking for. Fame, wealth, you know, becoming attractive to the opposite sex. So many things he had. Adoration, distinction, all these things he had. He had attained quite a high degree of mastery in the material world that most people spend their whole life just hoping for. And he actually got there. But what did then he wrote a song. I can't get no satisfaction. So even when he had all this stuff, his song was, he wrote the song, an honest account of his predicament. I can't get no satisfaction, although I try, and I try, and I try. Oh, how I try. He couldn't satiate himself. Because material desire is unlimited. The ambition of the conditioned soul is unlimited. We have unlimited desire to enjoy, but we have limited capacity to fulfill it. And also we have to obey certain laws. We have to go through certain channels. Because our will does not translate into automatic effects in the material world. We have to get the sanction of the super soul. We have to perform the appropriate karma. We have to be good boys and girls. Because if you don't, you simply get shackled up with suffering. And then so, this is our predicament in the material world. Still, the Krishna does not abandon us. Sitting within the heart is the super soul. The personality of Godhead is there. Sometimes the body is also compared to a tree. Sometimes it's compared to a field. In the field, you plant many seeds. Seeds of desire. And then, you know, in due course of time, the seeds sprout, grow into plants and trees and creepers and things. And you then harvest the fruits. So, yeah, with this body, with our field of experience, we're planting seeds of desire. And we're trying to reap the fruits. And thus the material body is like a big stock of these seeds. Or like a tree. A tree has many different branches. There are many different paths we can go down in this life. A myriad of opportunity to try and enjoy it. And on the end of all these branches are different fruits. So we're like a little bird sitting on the tree of the body, relishing, trying to relish all the different fruits of the body, all of different possible types of enjoyment. And at the same time, there's another bird with us. The super soul. But because we're so absorbed in the attempt to relish the fruits of the tree, we're completely oblivious to our companion. Until we again develop a desire to become, until we develop some disillusionment actually with the material world, with all the fruits. No matter how many of these fruits I chomp on, I'm still not satisfied. And actually it's getting a bit boring, you know, more of the same. Everywhere I bite, it's salty. It's the same thing. Sometimes the acharyas, they compare the material world to a salt mine. Everywhere, you know, you try and savor different aspects of the salt mine, but it's all salty. So in the same way, material pleasure begins to get a little bit hackneyed, and you realize it's all mixed with suffering anyway. And if you begin to awaken to knowledge, decide to get a little bit spiritual. Read Bhagavad Gita. Or somehow or other come in contact with spiritual knowledge. You begin to become awakened, thinking, this material world is a waste of time. Let me again develop my pure consciousness, my self-realization. Let me seek out the Lord within the heart and develop a relationship with Him once again. And then the bird turns to the companion bird, the super soul. And again, reestablishes that relationship. And eventually, the two birds, they fly away from the tree of the body and in this way, return to the spiritual world. So this is Krishna's great mercy. Surat, he's a great friend. So that is one aspect. But then there's another aspect. Who is this Surat? Who is this super soul? This is Krishna. So Krishna is not like an ordinary person. His consciousness is unlimited and all-pervading, omniscient, omnipresent. He is fully aware of everything that goes on within your heart, within your mind. He knows everything. Everything in this material world, under every rock, in every pocket, in the dark recesses of your mind, subconscious. He's there, he knows perfectly. So this is one aspect. But another aspect is Krishna in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. He is simply enjoying, fully absorbed in his pastimes with his most intimate devotees who their love is so pure and their trust is so high that he's fully surrendered to the love and fully absorbed. In one sense, he lets himself get covered and forget, you know, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He forgets that and just thinks, these are my friends, this is my mother, this is my... So he gets into the whole rasa of the whole thing. So, you know, here we are in the material world, full of mixed desires, trying to be Krishna conscious. But what is required actually to attract the personnel, to attract that person who is simply absorbed with his intimate devotees in the spiritual world? What it requires is a sincere cry. How are you going to catch this person's attention? It requires a sincere cry. It requires a sincere effort. What is that effort? Ultimately, that effort is to consolidate one's desire at one single point. To bring it all into focus at one single point. Now, every Saturday and Sunday, we chant this prayer, the Shikshastika prayer, which is by Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya influenced so many of his disciples to write books, but he himself didn't write books. But he did leave eight written verses with the Sri Sri Shikshastika prayers. And the Shikshastika prayers are very deep. The first verse begins with a mission statement. What is the purpose of this Sankirtan movement? And then after that, it proceeds to go through different levels of devotional intensity, of different stages of focus. It begins with a lamentation, actually. Oh, my Lord, your holy name alone can bring all benedictions to the living beings. And thus you have hundreds of millions of names like Krishna and Govinda. And these transcendental names, you invested all your transcendental energies. There are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. Oh, my Lord, out of kindness you enable us to easily approach you by these holy names. But I am so unfortunate that I have no attraction for them. In the Bible it says that one should not cast jewels before swine. Because the swine, the pigs, they won't appreciate the jewels. So Lord Chaitanya is saying, I'm just like that actually, because I have the greatest treasure, the holy name, which is non different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But due to my fallen condition, I have no attraction for these names. I can't appreciate them properly. So he's lamenting. And this is actually an important step in self-realization. One should feel should lament about his fallen condition and his forgetfulness of the Lord. And then he says, one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So this is, of course, a statement of humility. That one needs to be humble. And what does humbleness mean? Be less focused on one's own powers, and to understand one's constitutional position as a servant. Actually, I'm not the controller, I'm not the enjoyer, I'm simply a tiny, tiny spark, part and parcel of the Supreme. And I'm caught in this great material energy, this powerful material energy, which so easily can swamp my consciousness and make me forgetful. So this is important. One should be tolerant, devoid of false prestige, you know, falsely claiming the strengths of the body, the powers that come with your body, which is actually on loan. It's not yours, it's on loan. Like I said, it's part of the material energy. It's been given to you, partly as a reward, partly as a punishment. So if you become very proud of your good looks or your prowess or whatever, this is foolishness. And it is a sign that false ego is entering the consciousness. And one is false ego means ego is self-identification. False ego means false self-identification. So one understands or believes one is something other than what he is or she is. One thinks, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, I am a big man. And in this state of mind, one is unable to act like a devotee. And therefore the holy name loses its taste, because the rasa is not correct. What is the mood of chanting? What did Srila Prabhupada say?
Crying.
Crying like a child crying for its mother. He often translated the Maha Mantra, saying, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your devotional service. In other words, please allow me to render some humble service to act in my constitutional position. So when one's state of mind is like that, the nectar flows through the holy name, through the service, through the prasadam. And one is enlivened in Krishna consciousness. Then, of course, he carries on. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women. I guess for a woman, that you could say, nor do I desire big, strong, confident men. Nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. So now he is stating with determination, na, 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 na janam, na danam, na sundaram. I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it. Simply affirming that what he wants is to be a devotee. He wants the devotional service of the Lord. And that means blocking out all aspirations to try and enjoy this material world in the form of the opposite sex, in the form of wealth or material facility, and in the form of followers or people adoring you. So this is very much exemplified in the mood of Srimati Rukmini Devi. She's so humble. She's saying here, O lotus-eyed one, though you are satisfied within yourself and thus really turn your attention toward me, please bless me with steady love for your feet. So she is acknowledging that Krishna is not obligated. Krishna is so powerful. She's requesting that simply bless me with love for your lotus feet. This is all I want. And that will be my reward, actually. My devotion is satisfying to me. Whether you reciprocate or not. And as we move through the Shikshastika prayers, that is the final verse that Lord Chaitanya speaks. I know no one but Krishna is my Lord, and he shall remain so, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace, or makes me broken hearted by not being present before me. He is completely free to do anything and everything, for he is always my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. So Lord Chaitanya is saying that the mood of pure devotion is that reciprocation or no reciprocation, I am simply going to serve Krishna. And of course Krishna is not Krishna is not going to leave his devotee in limbo. No, you will certainly be satisfied with your devotion, because Krishna will appear within the consciousness even in separation. This is the power of this verse. It's actually referring to the fact that Krishna left Vrindavan. The gopis were simply crying day and night, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? And this is the mood also of the Krishna consciousness movement. We are Rupa Nugas, following in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, who never found Krishna. They simply were in Vrindavan saying, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? With great intense feelings of separation. But in that separation, Krishna is present in a different form, not externally, so-called externally, whatever that means, but internally, within the mind, within the meditation of the devotee, Krishna is there. And this is what Uddhava was sent by Krishna to teach the gopis, and saying, actually, I couldn't, because your love is so pure, so deep, so unconditional, I could not repay you perfectly. Therefore, the only thing I could do was leave you. And in leaving you, your meditation upon me would become even more intense. And in that meditation, I am fully present. So, this is Rukmini Devi's mood also, that you really even give me much attention. Of course, this was not true, as the Acharyas explained, but still, you know, just please bless me with steady love for your lotus feet. Allow my devotion to be so chaste, so pure, so focused. So we should aspire for this as well. Actually, this is Rukmini Devi continuing. I don't consider your words false, Madhusudan. Quite often an unmarried girl is attracted to a man, as in the case of Amba. Purport. Having refuted everything Lord Krishna said, Srimati Rukmini, in a gracious frame of mind, now praises the truthfulness of his statements. In other words, she accepts that Lord Krishna used her as an example to elucidate ordinary female psychology. The king of Kashi had three daughters, Amba, Ambalika, and Ambika. And Amba was attracted to Salva. This story is narrated in Mahabharata. So this course is a very fascinating story. Bhishmadev saw that Bhishmadev had taken a vow of brahmacharya. But the who was going to continue the dynasty? So with Satyavati and Shantanu, the father of Bhishmadev, they gave birth to two sons. And then Shantanu died, actually. And then Bhishma was the senior man in the family. And he then thought, well, since I'm not going to get married and produce children to increase the dynasty, I should get wives for the eldest of the sons, Vichitravirya. And he then heard about the king of Kashi had three daughters who he was going to marry. Very beautiful. And they were having a Svayambhara ceremony where they could choose whoever they wanted. Place the garland around the neck of the king or prince that most attracted them, due to qualities, of course. And Bhishma decided, I will go there and I'll get these princesses for Vichitravirya. So he turned up. Bhishma was extraordinarily powerful. He turned up and there was many princes and kings of the world who were very eager to gain the hand of just one of these princesses. Bhishma Dev just walked in and says, so, there's different types of marriages. For Kshatriyas, it's perfectly bona fide for them to just kidnap a girl and show his prowess like that. So, I'm going to take all three of these girls, and if you've got a problem with that, we'll step outside. So he basically put them on the chariot and started, just cruised out of the ceremony, and the king was just furious. This impudence. Audacity. So they immediately, you know, tried to chase down Bhishma. And there was a big fight, and Bhishma Dev basically destroyed all of them. Many thousands of them. It's so powerful. And then it turned out that when he took the princesses back, it turned out that one of them, Amber, he presented them to his brother-in-law, his half-brother, Vichitravirya. And, you know, because this is a young prince, he needed to get married and produce children. But Amber, one of the princesses, she said, there's a problem. My heart is already attached to King Salva. And you've disrupted the natural flow which was going to bring us together. So please let me go back to Salva. So she'd already decided, the point is she'd already decided in her mind that she was she had her mind made up who she was attracted to. So this is not uncommon. And this is the point Rukmini Devi made. Because Krishna said that you made a decision before you'd even met me, before you even married. So he says this is not uncommon. The mind of a promiscuous woman always hankers for new lovers, even if she is married. An intelligent man should not keep such an unchaste wife, for if he does, he will lose his good fortune both in this life and the next. So when I read this verse in preparation, I was thinking that the mind of a promiscuous woman always hankers for new lovers. And I was thinking, isn't that everybody's mind? Especially in this Kali Yuga. But the mind is promiscuous. Not only in the aspect of sex desire, but also just in general. The mind is promiscuous. It likes to speculate, it likes to run here and there. It doesn't like to fix on any one thing. It doesn't like to be focused. So this is something we have to focus. We have to focus our mind. We have to bring it to one point. What is that point?
Krishna.
Simply in desiring devotional service. We have to become chaste like Rukmini. See, Bhagavatam gives examples of so many great devotees. Yeah. Personalizes the devotional process and makes it easier for us to understand what is the behavior of a devotee, just like our spiritual masters have to exemplify that to us, just like Srila Prabhupada exemplified what it means to be a devotee. Because some of the Vedas are very abstract. There's a difference, and two things, abstract and concrete. Abstract is the principle, the idea, the formless principle behind behind things. And the concrete is when you take that principle and you manifest it in practical day-to-day activities. So the examples in the Bhagavatam, they make the Vedas, the goal of the Vedas, the consciousness that the Vedas are ultimately pushing us to attain. They make that concrete. We see in the character of the devotees and the behavior and the activities, we see the concrete goal which we're trying to attain. So Rukmini Devi is that example in this of chastity. She's especially chaste. That's her one of her foremost qualities. So we should definitely take inspiration from this. Try to become focused like Rukmini. Try to become surrendered so much so that we're not so much looking for respect, reward, gain, position, influence by performing devotional service. We simply want to serve in the most pure capacity we can muster. Become as pure in heart and intention as we can. And simply by cultivating that pure devotion, we'll become fully satisfied because it is that devotion which will fill us up. Devotion is very sweet. And if your heart is full of devotion and love for Krishna, you have attained the highest state. You'll be fully satisfied. So this is the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. The purification of heart, the focus of desires at the Lord's lotus feet, simply to become a speck of dust or an atom at the lotus feet of Krishna. And there's infinite space, there's infinite room there for all of us. Once you become internally focused as a devotee, your envy goes away because you realize there's plenty of mercy to go around. And my satisfaction in devotional service doesn't require me to have an external position or even a certain service. You know, when you become very purified, which can take many, many years, and you move away from karma yoga, meaning doing things that you like to do and offering results, and arrive at bhakti yoga, meaning I just want to serve, whatever, in whatever capacity, whatever is required, then one is liberated, actually. One is liberated from the conditioned state. One's happiness is no longer conditional. It's just it arises from a natural state of consciousness which is not dependent on external factors. Now that is a great attainment. That is a great attainment. That is liberation, perfect liberation. Even in the material world, so-called material world, which doesn't exist for somebody in such a consciousness, actually. Even in such a condition, one is liberated. So, I'll stop here. It's getting late. Any questions or comments on these points? Yes, Prabhu.
I have got one comment on this. In this particular verse, Queen Kunti is actually herself in the external energy. Actually, she is internal potency. But in this verse, she is identifying herself as the... So what is the... Do you want to throw some light on that?
Lord Krishna is satisfied within himself, and if we remember that Srimati Rukmini Devi is his internal potency, we can understand that his loving affairs with her are an expression of his pure spiritual happiness. Here, however, Queen Rukmini humbly identifies herself with the Lord's external energy, which is her expansion. What is the question?
In the third paragraph of this verse 46.
Yeah.
Queen Rukmini humbly identifies herself with the Lord's external energy.
Yes. Which is her expansion.
Yeah.
What she's referring to is the this material world. Because there's two things. There's the consciousness, and then there's the field of experience. Yeah. And the material world, it's Krishna's energy, but it's external energy. And it's this energy which is impregnated with the living entities. So, what it's referring to is Krishna, simply by his glance, impregnating his consort, and it's said that the material nature is the mother, and God is the father, Krishna is the father. So he's impregnating the material energy to create the creation. That's my understanding. And when he shows such a desire, agitated by passion, the creative energy is passion. So when a man wants to expand his dynasty or expand his family line, he looks upon his wife with desire, and she takes that as a benediction, the chaste wife. So Rukmini Devi takes that as a benediction when he looks upon her with desire. Now I want to expand. And he takes that as, because that's her service. So she takes that as a great benediction. It's your mercy. Is that... You want to say anything else about that?
Thank you.
That's the best I can do, so... Any other points? Well, thank you all for listening so attentively. Peacefully. Gontraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Yeah.